Welcome to Trust the Journey. I'm Melanie Curtis.
And I'm Jason Maletsky.
Thank you, legit, for joining us today.
Yeah, our mission is living and learning, laughing and loving together with you.
We're here to grow and contribute through our practice of openness, honesty, vulnerability, humility, and trust, trusting the entire journey.
Yeah, and on that journey, we often talk about plant medicines, psychedelics, and other avenues of healing. When we do, we are sharing for informational purposes only. We're not doctors or therapists, and we don't promote doing anything illegal.
Inside us all, we have a deep, powerful knowing. We encourage curiosity, healing, and exploration of this consciousness.
Damn straight. Together, our handle is trustthejourney.today. Individually, you can find her at melaniecurtis.com and me at jasonmaletsky.com.
Thank you all again so much for being with us. On to the show. Today, we are thrilled to welcome Lucy Sharping. Lucy is a dynamic peak performance health coach. She's a mind-body therapist, writer, and speaker who has devoted over two decades to helping her clients tap into their neurobiology and unlock the power of their mind to turn challenges into wins. As a holistic performance specialist, her expertise spans sports therapies, pain and stress management, nutrition, hypnosis, holistic health, and consciousness coaching. She is a passionate food advocate at Food as Medicine, as the exploration of the mind-body phenomena for self-healing and optimization. Lucy works with people who are committed to getting out of their own way and creating lasting change. Her clients include leadership professionals, elite and Olympic athletes, action sports and endurance athletes, and those who wish to break free from the fear matrix and improve their mental and emotional fitness. As the founder of Flow Mind Coaching and Flow Mind Yoga, Lucy's unique microdosing flow methods offer a revolutionary approach to chronic pain management and mind-body peak performance. She's the founder of Conscious Corporate Cultures, dedicated to mindfulness and leadership, and co-founder of Fusion Flow Retreats, yoga and active lifestyle retreats for the health-conscious fun seeker. Fun seeker, ooh, I like that. Lucy is committed to helping individuals harness their innate power and achieve lasting success, self-love, and freedom. Lucy's journey, marked by early entrepreneurial success as a restaurant owner and at age 16, a stint with acting and a career in Latin dance, reflects her deep engagement with diverse fields, including a lifelong passion for action sports. She loves to be climbing up or carving down a mountain, getting her, quote, knees in the breeze, skydiving, meditating for hours, or being on stage, dancing her heart out in some elaborate costume. Heck yes. Internationally recognized. She leads workshops and retreats in orthopedic bodywork, getting high on health, holistic nutrition, pain and stress management, performance mindset, microdosing flow, saying yes to stress, yoga and flow adventures, and Ayurvedic medicine. Lucy, welcome.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Welcome to the show, Lucy. So great to see you.
It's really great to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. So I'll just give our audience a little bit of the backstory of how we've flowed right into this interview is that Melanie and I were chatting. We were like, we really need to do an episode on flow. And I immediately thought of Lucy because of our last interaction and her informing me about how she's been using microdosing flow to manage her journey. And we need to give her a call, and just bam, right away, everything fell into place. So it's really a pleasure. And for the audience, Lucy and I, we've been friends for 20 years more. Yeah, more than 20 years.
Age.
And all kinds of different versions from the skydiving world to the healing ourselves world, to the Burning Man experience, to the entrepreneur experience, to the our friends and relationships and families and layers and layers and layers. So I welcome my dear friend Lucy to the show.
Thank you.
I am very excited to talk about flow. Really looking forward to it. When I heard the microdosing flow idea, I was like, ooh, I love the notion of that. I don't really know what she means by that, but I can guess, but I really am looking forward. I don't know if that's a good place to start. Do we want to start with your story? You guys know each other better. I almost want to have you guys set us up. I'm just sharing my enthusiasm and excitement to get to know you better and hear all that you have to offer.
Sure. Well,
tell us the journey.
We can start wherever we like. So perhaps I'll tell you a little bit about my story and how I discovered what I now call microdosing flow. And as flow coaches, that you guys are probably on the money with guesstimating what that means. In 2012, I had a pretty severe injury. I basically had my neck busted by a chiropractic adjustment, in which I suffered severe neurological problems. Those problems spanned from my face collapsing, my head smashing to the side, my tongue sticking out uncontrollably. I got uncontrollable with the word fuck, a little bit Tourette's-y.
That's it.
Much to my mother's dismay, bless her, but she came around. and basically from that experience, which has many details to it, I could tell you my symptoms, and actually I probably should
so you
can understand the magnitude of flow.
Yes.
And microdosing flow. I have developed a neurological condition called trigeminal neuralgia. And what that means is from this injury, I had an arterial compression. And from that injury, it's caused a venous protrusion to appear and grow underneath one of my trigeminal nerves on my left side. And that's one of your primary nerves that runs into your face like this. And trigeminal neuralgia is often called the suicide disease, and it's aptly named because it's extremely, extremely painful. And there's two types. There's trigeminal 1 and 2. They've renamed them since I bothered to educate myself. But essentially what that means is excruciating bouts of pain in your face that's like electric bolts. I can only describe it as like someone, electric ants, or someone embedding barbed wire in your face and dragging it out slowly. It felt like, have you ever seen that movie, The Mummy?
Yes.
If you haven't seen the movie, there's a scene in The Mummy where the mummy's face melts off, right? It melts off and then you see your skeleton.
Is it?
That's a really good visual to describe trigeminal neuralgia.
Wow.
So you literally feel like your skeleton is exposed. It's insane. And then I also have trigeminal 2, which meant that I had consistent neuropathic pain. So I was being hit by pain in an acute phase and a chronic phase pretty steadily for years. I was misdiagnosed. Unfortunately, Western medicine, because they couldn't see what was going on, or they chose not to listen to me when I said what the situation was. I was misdiagnosed with things like Bell's palsy, reoccurring Bell's palsy, meningitis.
Yes,
I developed a brain trauma from those symptoms. And like I say, some of those symptoms are like my head smashing and my arms flailing like this, like completely out of control. And I found myself staring at the wall for hours, thinking I was doing things and I wasn't.
Wow.
The day would just disappear and my husband would come home, and I was writing at the time, and I thought I had written a lot, or I had been writing all day, but I would have written a couple of lines and that's about it. And the day just went like that. It was a very, very scary and bizarre experience. From that, with the various misdiagnoses, I had to find my own methods to manage my situation. Now, the Western method is to throw drugs at you. And
always.
And now, I'm not going to vilify drugs. I love drugs sometimes. However, there's a time and a place.
Yep.
And chronic pain and mental health don't have a specific target. It's not the same. And opiates don't work on neuropathic pain in the same kind of a way. So I actually had one doctor tell me that if you don't want to help yourself, I can't do anything for you because I refuse to take opiates.
Yes, sir.
But I was like, I'm not going to do it. Like, I've seen my friends, I've seen my family go down that path. And that was a choice I wasn't willing to make. And basically the fear of becoming trapped by those drugs outweighed the fear of me dealing with this condition in a different way.
Amazing.
So that set me off onto my journey. And as you can imagine, microdosing flow is not like really new. It's revolutionary because it's so attainable, and I'll get to that.
Yeah.
But essentially I started meditating a lot, which is often a light flow or a micro flow experience.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, I was able to trigger reward chemistry in my brain. Now,
well, Lucy, can I ask you a question real quick? Were you aware of flow state before? Like, because I'm almost wondering, like, you're in this acute situation, all of that you described, clearly, wildly easy to validate how difficult that sounds and was. Yeah. I'm wondering, like, was there a thought, was a moment or a thought, or you just were like, I know flow is good, or did you not even know about flow? Like, how did you get there?
No, I'd been involved in flow and yoga, which flow is called samadhi in yoga.
Yep.
Things like that for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And as a sports therapist, it's the concept of the zone is,
yep,
it was not new to me. So my prior learnings actually helped me in my place of disarray.
Got it. Amazing.
Because the answer is no, I didn't know. All I knew was I wanted to change my experience.
Okay.
And I had some tools that I could do that. And those tools happened to be breathing and focus. Nothing fancy. No, I'm not doing any breath holding, not doing anything like that. I'm just doing slow breathing and focus breathing. And that helped me for an amount of time. But then when the neurological stuff showed up in full force, I wasn't able to fly. I lost my eyesight. My optic nerve discs have actually rotated completely. And I can't drive in the dark. I haven't been able to drive or even see in the dark since 2014, I think 2015. So all of those sorts of things were occurring for me. And so I was keeping it at bay. But like I say, when the gnarly, gnarly neurological stuff showed up, I didn't feel like I could do it with just meditation and focus alone. So I used cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
And actually you came and saw me at that time, Jay, and I was absolutely fucking out of my mind. Like, I was...
Yeah, you were in a really bad way. I was so distraught because of how physically, mentally, neurologically, just completely distraught you were, and there was nothing that I could do to help in any way at all, and it was really painful to watch.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And at that time, cannabis was my drug of choice because I was familiar with it, and it doesn't stop your pain completely, and that's what I wanted. I didn't want to stop my pain completely. I needed to override the pain signals, and I knew that because, like I say, my prior learning. So thankfully, some habitual subconscious work was helping me out in my conscious place of fuckery. So from that, I was pretty much high as a kite for 2 years solid.
Okay.
For neuropathic pain, they generally say 1-to-1 THC CBD or higher. So it's not like using CBD where you don't feel high at all. I was very high. I was pretty most of the time.
Okay. Yeah.
And I wouldn't change that because it did help at the time. And then we went off and I thought it was bad, but I didn't know it was going to get worse. And my husband and I went for my 40th birthday, our 40th birthday. We went to Asia and we went to New Zealand and whatnot. And we happened to be there and we'd flown, and flying really affects me. So it doesn't anymore, but it did at the time. Pressure, any kind of slight pressure change. So when we were descending in a plane, I would inevitably have a pain attack and pass out. So that was happening, and I knew that was happening. But when we got to our hotel, out of nowhere, Gent and I were talking and about where to go for dinner, I think. And then literally out of nowhere, I had this pain attack that was off the charts. If I had a knife, I would have cut my face off.
Ugh.
It was that bad. Like, wow. It was, that's not an exaggeration. It's hard to explain when you can't see something for people.
Yeah.
But hopefully this helps. Yeah, I would really have cut my face off. And my husband freaked out, as he was, bless him, just like you said, Jay, he didn't know what to do for me because there's not much to do. So we raced off to the pharmacy and got the strongest painkiller that they had, which was Tramadol over the counter, Thailand. All right. So I took that and it did help me a little bit, and then, but it didn't. And coming off it very quickly, like the discontinuation of the drug just amplified everything for me. So I was trapped for like 8 to 10 days in this cycle of Tramadol and coming off and dealing with amplified pain. And it was insane. It was, well, it was insane. And we finally got to New Zealand, and I happened to be talking, we happened to be talking with my mom, and we were talking about stroke. And I stood up and I went, oh, I feel weird. And I passed out. And I was on the floor. I could hear people around me, but there was nothing I could do to move. I could hear my family concerned. When I finally did come to, they were concerned I was having a stroke.
Yeah.
And so I went to the hospital. And finally at the hospital, they listened to me in New Zealand, big ups New Zealand. And they gave me some imagery. First of all, the doctor, when I'd got there, I'd been to my primary care doctor, and they give you a drug called amitriptyline for neuropathic pain. It's a low-dose antidepressant. And at that point, I was willing to do anything.
Okay.
I mean, on the way from the airport, from our hotel to the airport, I was in such a mess that our poor taxi driver in Thailand didn't speak a word of English. I was like a wild animal. He pulled over, ran into his friend's pharmacy, comes out with some undisclosed pill and hands it to me. And I'm like, yes, okay, I'll take that.
Wow.
That's
anything at all.
And that's not that was not my previous method. I'm very much a researcher and there's a time and a place, but I was like, yes, do anything. And so when I finally got to New Zealand, and the guy had said, I think I'd fainted from adverse reaction to amitriptyline. He was like, no, probably not. It's just from the pain. And I was having vertigo and whatnot. The bright lights in there were really triggering it. So I had to just go into meditation, and I just dropped into meditation, focus and breathe. And Emma, my sister, Emma, you guys know Emma, was there, and she's like, are you meditating? Because she was watching the monitor, and I dropped my breathing to 4 breaths a minute. And because I dropped it down to 4 breaths a minute, which is only like a 7 second, 7.5 second inhale, exhale, I was able to manage the pain.
Right?
So fast forward to a little time later, and we were off going to Europe to do a fusion flow retreat. And I was really busy on these retreats. And again, I'd flown, so I'd had a trigger. And as you could imagine, at this point, I'd developed a pretty solid anxiety, which was unusual for me. I never suffered from anxiety at all. It was pretty solid PTSD, to be honest.
Yep.
And I was never scared of flying. Love flying. Not a problem. But my system had learnt to be scared of flying because of the result. So here we were in Europe doing this retreat, and I was getting less and less able to handle my shit, basically. And that's one of my bigger fears, is not being able to do what I set out to do. And thankfully, Brent Chandler of Dekunu Technologies, he was on our retreat, and he was a business advisor at that point. He insisted that I fly in the tunnel. And because our retreats included the tunnel at that point, because we knew that you could trigger float state in the tunnel easily. So we were trying to do it on purpose and do it from that kind of optimization in the sport perspective.
Yep.
And I said, no, but he insisted. So thank you, Brent. he insisted.
Thank you, Brent.
Went in, Yes, absolutely. I went in and I was a bit nervous because Brent's a badass player, right? So I was like, oh my God. And I hadn't flown for ages. So I was a little bit like, oh no, what am I going to do? But I geared up and I was like, right, let's do it. So we went in and we just set a minimal plan and belly flyer am I. And so we do some of that and we did some loops and rolls and things like this. And when I came out of the tunnel, I was completely free of pain. Zero, nothing at all. Nothing.
Wow.
And it was like a magical moment when you're in such severe pain. And I was like, So.
I feel like I have tears coming up. I feel that. Wow, girl.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah, because you guys will have had your own experience like that.
I am so tuning into like my pains in the same journey are not caused by the same thing, but the deep traumas that have plagued me as a person, I've escaped them through flow. That is straight up why my life has been the life that I've had, because I've escaped my life into flow and pursued passions of flow in order to live free of past traumas.
Same.
Absolutely.
Same.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I mean, that's the beauty of flow, right? When you think about it, you hear flow, especially in the sport, as like, or even workplace, as like, it's really cool. The idea of flow is cool. It's like, yeah, I'm going to optimize myself. I'm going to get better in my sport. I'm going to be like a better leader or
peak
whatever
performance.
It is. Performance. Yeah. And as a peak performance coach, I'm all down with that.
Me but too. Yep.
Realistically, as a peak performance coach, what we're talking about, and I believe that you're talking about as well, Mel, is peak performance of your entire system and not just one slice of the pie, peak performance of your whole life.
Yes.
And this is where flow can really help you, and microdosing flow can really help you in that. So basically, when I was in the tunnel that day, I was like, okay. I'd never thought in my, at that time, 20-something years of dealing with pain for people and helping people out of pain, that I could adjust pain signals to such a measurable degree. And it was like night and day. So from that moment on, pursuing flow state for pain management and mental health became my focus. And I tested it in all kinds of ways. And so I'll give you an example of one.
Yeah, I mean, I swear, I am just so that you feel like we are talking at all, I am just riveted, just so you know. So that's why I'm not interjecting. I'm just like, oh my God, this is gold. Absolute gold. And I'm not trying to pump you up. I am just like, this is such gold. People, everyone listening, yes, rewind, listen to it again.
Get it, yeah.
Yeah. So please, yeah, please go on. Tell us more about once you had this sort of epiphany, this realization, then that's when you started thinking about this quote unquote idea of microdosing flow.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, I know we can trigger flow in certain challenging environments. And I know you can trigger low flow through focus and breathing, deep embodiment. So I made it my mission to test it. And at that time, because I was pretty messed up, like I lost a lot of weight, I could have a pain attack and you could watch me lose weight. I had someone on a friend of ours on a retreat say, I am watching you lose weight right now. Like I can see it because she could tell I was having a pain attack and I was trying to keep it together. So I had a whole lot of biological basics that were also alarming for me, being underweight. My stress system was just going haywire. It was like I was running a marathon inside all day long. I couldn't eat enough food to counter. Like I ate three people worth of food. Like I was chowing hard and just going through it. It wasn't lack of food. There's times when you can't eat because of trigeminal neuralgia. You can't have anything touch your lips. You can't have anything touch your tongue. Cold wind, even my hair touching my face, things like that. That can trigger it, right? So it's a really gnarly life messing up experience. And so when you're not in pain, you got to eat, right? To keep your energy up, to keep everything up. And so I was not lacking in food. I was just burning through it like crazy, like really like crazy. So here I was in Thailand again. I'd gone to visit my friend and I get my teeth done when I'm in Thailand. It's my dentist. That's where I go. It's much better than get it done in the States. Sorry, US.
Yeah.
But I'll have it done over there.
Also true.
And so, yes. So going to the dentist is an ordeal in itself for me, because you have to hold your mouth open, which can collapse my face. And at that time, it would stretch my face all the way down here so that you could see my lower jaw. So my whole face would fully collapse. And then there's the idea of someone's touching you and all this sort of thing. So all of that, just to walk through the door, I had to say yes to stress and accept and breathe and be there. And she goes, she needed to clean out a couple of things. And she goes, madam, I need to take out these two fillings and go down to the root.
Thank you for listening. If you're receiving value from this episode, we would love it if you would show your support for the show by subscribing on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, and follow us on Instagram. You can click the like button, leave us a comment, or share the podcast with somebody directly.
Every month, we host integration coaching circles. These are safely held spaces for those looking to heal, grow, and connect in community. They are beautiful, alive. So much good work is happening. You are invited to join us. Go to trustthejourney.today/integration. You can join the Trust the Journey family, which includes these integration coaching circles and our private Facebook group where we connect and support each other. Sign up by going to our website, trustthejourney.today, obviously, and click on the orange Patreon button.
Now, it's your support and engagement that make the show possible. We love connecting with you. So feel free to DM us anytime on Instagram with your thoughts at trustthejourney.today. And now I'm back to our regularly scheduled programming.
So Lucy, the last thing that we heard, you said when someone's drilling into your mouth, it's painful either way. That's the last thing we heard.
Okay, absolutely. So it was painful. I'm not going to lie. That was painful. It's not like I was all om shanti. This is great, right? It was the smell, the sound, the everything. It was gnarly in that way. But I was really invested in microdosing flow, and I trust my journey. And I was like, I believe that I can do this. And in an amount of time, I went into a flow state. And I can't remember what happened after that, really. All I remember being done and then laughing hysterically. And the woman said to me, she goes, "You're a very strong lady. You do like the monks." And I happened to say to her, "Actually, I just know how a microdose flow." Of course, she had no idea what I was talking about. But essentially, so there I was doing something that ordinarily would be quite painful without a condition like I have. And I was able to trigger this flow state. And when we talk about flow state, basically that's just triggering reward chemistry. It's triggering reward chemistry and overriding your stress response. So I triggered my relaxation response, got a flood of endorphins, and it's relative. I truly believe pain is a flow trigger. And when you say yes to that stress, you get that little window of opportunity, and that's when the reward chemistry rushes in. And
so it's very interesting how your dentist there mentioned the monks. And for me, that's really like a talking point that deeply relates to what we talk about on this show a lot, which is this journey into self-awareness and turning the attention inward. And I mean, monks are the biggest example in human journey of people who point their attention inward and control their outward experience and their inward experience by just observing themselves. And literally there's the example, right? The monk, the meditator, right? And this version of meditating, of paying attention to our breath, the cadence of our breath, paying attention to where our thoughts are, paying attention to what our body's doing, and taking ourselves out of the experience so that we can actually control the experience, or at least observe the experience from a place that is non-judgmental, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And whether you like to go from, and I like to cover flow from all angles, like I'm very much into neuroscience. So I love how the neuroscience element and how the brain works.
Me too.
Yeah. So that's really cool. And I love the yoga side of it, which basically neuroscience is just validating that nowadays. But it's that if you want to look at it from the monk perspective or the meditator perspective, or if you want to look at it from as simple as I'm focusing my mind and letting go of the idea of trying to control this situation. And that to me the element.
Let me ask you a question as far as the neuroscience piece of it. I have my own thoughts here. I don't have science to back this up, but I'm all about tossing theories around and getting different opinions on it. I feel like if we were to be in an MRI machine and we were measured, like watching brain activity and seeing which parts of the brain are activated when we're in our normal kind of state, and then comparing that to which parts of the brain are activated when we're in a state of heightened or extreme pain, and then differentiate that from when we switch to flow state, I'm sure we're going to see big changes as to actually like which parts of the brain are parts that are active. And so when I'm listening to your story, what I hear is my pain centers were going off the chart, and I used a tool of consciousness to switch which part of my brain was prioritizing attention at this point in my physical journey. You agree?
I wholeheartedly agree. And there is lots of measurement now for flow state to back that up. So the concept of hypofrontality or the changes in the prefrontal cortex, there's a network, yep. And I don't want to go into this too much right now, but there's a network called the default mode network. And that basically is when it's active when we're just daydreaming and not in focused attention. And when you focus your attention, you can dissolve that. And it's seen and it's been measured. And that dissolving of the default mode network is also seen when you take psychedelics.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about that. Agreed. On the show with psychedelics. And the dissolving of the default mode network and entrenching new neural pathways because of that, in a sense, that exploration outside of those trenches.
Exactly. So that's it. And I like to sum it up as adjusting your patterns of activation or your patterns of activity. So we're a bunch of activity. What we think, feel, everything that we think we know is thanks to the activity and the firing and the chemicals and whatnot in our brain. And so when you know that, and it's hard for people sometimes, especially if you're in chronic pain or you've been suffering with depression or anxiety and it's been ruling your life, that it's hard to grasp that for some people. But that's why I like to teach. Yep. I'm very much an educator on how your brain works. So it's like, when you start to understand that these patterns of activity are occurring and what you're doing is disrupting those patterns of activity and then creating new ones, whether we're looking at from a pain perspective and disrupting the pathways of pain, the ascending and descending pathways of pain, or whether we're talking about, am I doing something from a place of fear or love? Mm-hmm. That change, yes. Fear and love, is a chemical construct, right? And so you can be doing the same thing, but when you shift, if fear is driving my stress response, I could shift that to love through, say, acceptance of what it is, and my whole experience will change. I can be doing the same thing, but my whole experience will change.
So I want to segue with an idea that's been percolating within me for a long time, and having been a deep explorer of flow states in the psychedelic realm, in breathing exercises, in meditation, in high adventure extreme sports, all the different places, right? I have this, exactly what you're saying, this love or fear, the spiritual piece of it, right? Like when we move out of the we have to relate the physical body that we believe that we own, that we're inhabiting, to our soul's journey, right? But ultimately, the soul is at play in a much bigger picture, right? So this idea of inversing or changing our perspective to be like inside of fear or inside of love, being accepting and expanding or resisting and contracting, right? Fear, resistance, contraction means tightening. Okay, so if we have something that's painful and we squeeze it or push on it, what's going to happen? It's going to hurt more, right? If we have something that's painful and we choose to open and expand and allow and drop that and accept that, then we make space for it to move. We allow it to breathe, essentially. And there's the word breathe. Oh, how interesting, yeah, interesting. Right? We allow the breath, right? We allow the breath in. And one of the things that I've noted in my own experience with flow is a shift, like a polarization shift of moving from what we tend to refer to as our journey as time space. We're in time. We're thinking like a clock. I'm watching those minutes or the seconds tick down, and I'm moving through space, and time is my primary delineator of the experience. And with the entering into flow, I believe that shifts to space being the delineator, and therefore everything expands, and it expands around us because we're no longer tied to a single timeline, right? Time becomes less dominant, and our space, our physical journey, our mental journey, the entire acceptance of all that is becomes the primary element that we're experiencing. And that allows us to basically navigate the journey in a much different way, right? Rather than stuck to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, this linear experience to, I could go infinitely in any direction. I can slide left, I can go up, down, I can spin around, I can move on every axis freely. And that allows the mind to change the way that we're moving through our experience with suddenly these creative energies that we can't access when we're tied to, I must follow a timeline, I'm stuck on rails, you know?
Totally. Yeah. And what you're describing there is from a internal perspective, I love that beautiful way of explaining. That's a gorgeous way, and I'm real pragmatic, so I'm going to give you the pragmatic version of that. And that is what we're describing is our alarm bells, our internal alarm bells, our stress system and our relaxation system. And when we're when the body, even if we're not feeling emotionally stressed, like skydivers, you know, like, oh, no, don't worry about it. I'm not scared anymore. But you're still having, even though you don't feel adrenaline the same way. Yeah, parasympathetic
nervous system is still going, right?
Yeah, yep. You're still having a response in that way. And that causes constriction. And that constriction, like you said, tightens things. And that could be tightening your muscles. And that may be the case for, like, when you feel pain, because it might be tightening and affecting nerve conductivity. And
tighten your pupils.
Yes, exactly. Yep. Exactly. Right. All of that. And as soon as you say yes to stress instead of no, because when we're in stress, the sympathetic nervous system, we're fighting or we're flighting or we're freezing. And then there's fold or fawn as well, but that's the other side of the nervous system. But essentially, we've got those two things. And so we're wishing it was different. Essentially, we're wishing it was different. We're either going to fight this. I'm not accepting this. I'm going to either fight you because I believe I can dominate you, or I don't, somehow in my nervous system, I don't believe I have the skill for this challenge. So I'm going to flee in that way. And then if I'm a bit confused about it, or I'm not quite sure whether I should fight or flee, I might freeze, you know? And these are all elements of your nervous system. And as soon as you say yes to stress, and that can be as simple as saying the word yes instead of no, to yourself, you change your experience.
Yes.
You change your experience. It's not rocket science.
Yeah.
We try to overcomplicate things to make ourselves feel important, and that's just a human thing. You know, I think it's just a human thing. Yeah, exactly.
I'm not the only one who does that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Lucy.
And when we don't do that.
Keep going.
Yeah, go ahead.
Please. I won't forget.
Yeah, when we don't do that. Sure. That saying yes in that moment, you are accepting the moment. And from accepting that moment, acceptance does not mean you like it. I do not like that I have excruciating fucking pain and that a chiropractor busted my neck and my life has changed from that. I don't like that. That would be bullshit, right? The fact is, it's happened. So how am I going to live my life within this thing that I have? I can distract myself from being present in the flow by wishing it was different, or I can accept and regain a sense of control in something I have no control over in that way. And from that, my experience changes.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Again, this is all such gold. What I was thinking about, Lucy, as you were sharing, it is examples in my own experience, of course, and other things that other people that have told me of their experiences. It made me immediately think about my experience with cold plunges, where it's acute stress to the system. And I've shared this about my experience with cold plunges, but that how I absolutely got to a place where I feel like I could sit there forever. Like it feels entirely mental to me, where I'm like, my body absolutely to me feels exactly like what you're describing. Like there is a certainty within me. Like I'm not saying, to your point, it's not fun. I don't necessarily like submerging myself in the ice cold water. That moment isn't delightful, but it is really empowering because of that amazing certainty that I've realized about my ability to access this state. Interestingly, on the other side of the house, because I like how you're pointing to the distinction of the two systems, where if anybody who's listened to the show at all knows about my lifelong experience with anxiety and sort of attachment struggles and stuff like that, and how my healing journey has really been centered around those emotional challenges so much more than anything physical. Knock on wood, I've never had chronic pain. I'm so grateful for that. I literally just today, running in the rain, I was in my head complaining. I was like, oh, I don't want to do this. I have 4 laps left, or whatever my mind was saying. And I was like, I have a healthy body. My legs work. I get to do this run. So it was an interesting experience there. Anyway, I'm sort of rambling, but the emotional challenges that I've faced in my existence, it has almost been more difficult for me to think about flow state relative to emotional pain, right? Where I think it seems so like logical, flow state, you're doing skydiving, you're going for a hike in the woods, you are even creatively, you're typing or drawing or... So anyway, I would love to hear more from you about that emotional side of the house of like, what would you advise to people who are in a similar situation that I've described where they're really struggling with anxiety or depression? Like, what do you coach those people to do?
Oh, girl, I've got a hack for you. And it's so simple. It is so simple. I'll give it to you in a minute. Right. So what I'd like to build to that is, we were just talking about acceptance, and acceptance, it's like, oh, how do you accept something, right? Acceptance is the outcome of perceived control. So perceived control, perceived control one is basically something that we feel like we can change. Something's happened. I've had a doctor's appointment. I'm running late. I can call and I'm like a bit stressed. I'm a bit anxiety. Oh shit, I'm in the traffic, whatever. Call them, I'm running late, and they say, yes, okay, no problem, Lucy, right? I feel back in control, it's okay. Secondary perceived control is about changing your wishes. And the outcome of that is acceptance. For example, hurricane flattens your house, completely destroys everything that you own, and you're standing in front of that thing, right? Now you can stay, and I do believe the power in moving through your fears and your emotions is to sit in those emotions and let that energy move through you, because what we're talking about is changing our energy. And secondary perceived control is about using mental strategies to change your wishes. And that, the outcome of that is acceptance. So my house is flattened. Okay, my house is flattened. I don't like that my house is flattened. I've lost everything. Now I can stay focused on the loss of the house that's flattened, or I can go, my house is flattened. There's nothing I can do about that. What do I do now? And I may have insurance and I call my insurance company, or I may have family members I can go and stay with that then may help me. That space for action comes after acceptance. And this is very much about our sense of control, because as human beings, we're all groping in the dark, looking for food, wishing things were different, right? And as soon as you can stop wishing things were different and get in the moment, because that thing that has happened is now in the past, it doesn't exist anymore. And if you're in anxiety, you're in the future, creating some changes in your stress system, right? So if you can zoom yourself into the moment, that is the magic of what acceptance does. It puts you in the moment and it gives that space for an action. So in regards to anxiety, let's say from your question, what is anxiety? Anxiety is an adrenaline rush with an emotion attached to it. It can come from biological basics like deficits within your body causing your alarm bells. Anxiety, or the stress response ignition, is an alarm bell, right? It's an alarm bell for your body to say something is not quite right. It's the same as pain. Pain is an alarm bell to say something is not quite right. So when we have stress and we have adrenaline and the other chemicals that go with stress, we've labeled that as anxiety, as a society. Those symptoms of that thing, that feeling of heart racing, that pounding, that thickness in your throat, that inability to focus, all of those things, we've accumulated and put those into a package and we call that anxiety. Now, if we want to, we can do anxiety. So if I asked you to show me, what do you do in your body when you have anxiety? What are you thinking about when you have anxiety?
Future.
Right. You're thinking about the future. Yep. You're actually imagining the future because you're not in the future.
Yep.
You're in the now. So you're imagining. So if we can use our very, very powerful imagination to imagine something shitty, we can imagine something much better.
Absolutely. I always say that about, we are super creative. When I talk to my clients as well, I'm like, we are wildly creative beings. Like the reason I'm a good coach is because I also am, I'm so good. My brain is so good at coming up with doomsday scenarios that I've cultivated the skill to also be able to come up with really fucking positive ones.
Yes.
Right. So it's like, it's, people ask me that, how are you so positive? And I'm like, well, I worked to build that skill for myself.
That's it. And that's it. It takes effort. It takes some effort to do it. And if you don't know, you don't know. So until you know, and that's why education is important, about letting people know what adrenaline is and what anxiety is and what it is not. It's really important. So then that gives you a sense of control. And then you can do something about that. And you don't have to actually, then doing something about that might be taking a really good exhalation and triggering your parasympathetic nervous system from exhaling. It might be, and the little hack I wanted to share with you, and this is how I get out of pain now very quickly and how I adjust my experience of anxiety. Sing at the top of your lungs.
Ooh.
Sing.
Oh my God, I love this suggestion.
I do this when I'm in my really stressed situations when I'm flying. When I'm pushing myself at my most, at the edges of my competency to be able to process incoming stressors in an environment where things are very abstract and very undefined and unknown as to what's coming, but there's a lot of risk, I will often move into singing and an awareness of breath to detach from those active stressors and bring the attention
inward. And one of my most heartbroken experiences of my whole life, I was traveling the world. I did like a world tour in like serious heartbreak. And one of the nights I was in, I don't know, I was in Greece by myself or something. And I totally sang Let It Go from Frozen on repeat for like 10 times in a row. And it was awesome.
Yes. That's it. Now, people, it's important to know you do not have to be a good singer to do this, right?
Totally.
The point is, singing not only is our vagus nerve attached to our vocal cords. So you're toning your vagus nerve, which then helps tone your ability to go into that relaxation side of your nervous system much more quickly. What are you doing when you're singing? You're breathing. You're focusing because you're singing words. You are no longer focused on the thing that you were creating in your head.
Amazing.
You have zoomed yourself in to just what you are doing. And so sing like a lark, mate. Sing like a lark. And the bigger you can, the bigger punchier bits. Like when my go-to songs now are Titanium by Sia,
love
Chandelier
it.
By Sia, because they have massive notes, right? And I have to breathe and I have to belt it out. And I can change my state by the time it takes me to sing a couple of songs. I can sing myself out of a pain attack and an anxiety attack like that. Just
wow.
Like that.
Wow. That's incredible.
I want to pull us back to that like deep, deep, deep etherical space here, because singing and dancing are these expressions of our true nature of being, where it's a decision, whether it's conscious or unconscious, because sometimes we just burst into song. Like, we don't always decide that we're going to sing. Sometimes it just sneaks out, and other times it just explodes out. And the same thing happens with dancing, right? Like, all of a sudden you're just moving, and might just be a little hip shake or a little toe tap, but all of a sudden you might just be going off, right? And these, to me, these are really, really important things to pay attention to, because creativity and our being in tune with the universe at its core level is about this like freedom of expression, and about vibration, and about resonance, and about frequency. And when we decide to sing or to dance, we literally vibrate at a frequency that expresses freedom, fearlessness, acceptance, allowing, just aligning with universal energy, the alignment with universal energy that's always there, right? It's not like that energy is ever missing. It's always on us to allow ourselves to align with that energy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was Einstein that said everything is energy. And from that experience, you to think about moving anxiety, because anxiety is a massive adrenaline, a massive energy surge in your sympathetic nervous system. You can choose to sit in it and just let it move through you. That's one method. And when you get more practiced at this, that's a natural progression of sitting in your feelings, because you're like, oh, you've built your skills. You've built your mental and emotional skills. But to start with, you might need to use some things like singing or dancing, movement, to shift your energy. And it's not just I'm moving my energy willy-nilly. It's you've now given your brain something to focus on, and you have let go of the idea of trying to control something else. It's the paradox of control that as flow state, right? It's one of the triggers of flow state, and it's one of the experiences or the characteristics of flow state, is that letting go of control, and then all of a sudden you feel more in control of yourself, because you're no longer distracted by those other things. You're not distracted by the imagination or the fears. Perhaps you have anxiety because you have real and present danger. And that's something we need to discern between when we have anxiety, is what is a real and present danger and what is an imagined or perceived threat.
Now, and you already said this, you touched on it. You said, when we think about anxiety, it's fear. It's a form of fear because it's a threat in the future, something that may possibly occur. Right? Like something might happen, or there is a present danger, which says I might get hurt, right? That hurt could be emotional, could be physical, could be mental, whatever type of pain or injury might happen. And that timeline is unidirectional, right? Like, we have pain in our past and we have pain in our future. These are inevitabilities, right? Like, there's fear of pain in front of us as anxiety, and fear of pain behind us, trauma, right? And this whole idea, I had sketched this little thing while you were talking. I had originally written space and time, and below it written time and space, and drawn an X between them. And then I made this timeline, just a simple line with a bunch of ticks along it. And at one end of it is the trauma behind us. And at one end ahead of that timeline is the fear of pain in front of us or anxiety. But on either side of this timeline is these big 90-degree spaces of nothing, just wide open. There's nothing there, right? And we can just completely detach from that timeline of, I'm stuck to this thing that is happening to me. I'm on this, I have to be here right now, to, whoa, there's all this room out here that I could be in if I were to just step off that attachment to the line of time.
Absolutely. And I'd like to just clarify something in that what was just said there. The stress response is a survival circuit activation. It's a stress response, hence adrenaline, hence the biological shifts. It only becomes anxiety when we attach an emotional label to that. And our brain constructs with neuroscience now, it's fascinating, Lisa Feldman Barrett, check her out if you haven't, is all about how the brain constructs emotions, right? And in context, due to past experience, current context, it's like the ingredients of emotion. So until we put a label on it, it's just an adrenaline rush. It is just a stress response until we put something on it. Now, what we call fear is actually part, it's not, the emotions are not hardwired into us. We construct them. So fear actually involves a lot of cortical processing in order for us to experience what we experience as fear. Other than that, it's a survival circuit activation. It is a threat detection within our system. So fear can be seen from a control and arousal standpoint. Fear is like a stress reaction with a perceived level of danger or threat attached to it. Anxiety is a stress reaction or an adrenaline rush with a perceived lack of control. Fun is a stress reaction with a perceived level of control. And thrill is a stress reaction with a perceived level of control and danger. It's also the common denominator. The denominator is a stress response, a stress reaction.
I love every bit of this. Just again, taking this and bringing the distinctions and really sharing with people all of these distinctions. I hear it relative to keynote speaking, for example. You hear it a lot with public speaking in any form, really, about you reframe the fear to excitement, that type of stuff. You're skydiving, you reframe the fear to excitement, yada, yada, yada. We've said many times on the podcast through sharing about our healing work with psychedelic medicines and this and that. And Jay loves quoting me and I'm always so grateful, but I've said before that I'm not afraid of my feelings. And that's because I have met them through the deep work I've done with psychedelic medicines to the point where I no longer have that layered of this is scary, this is bad. Like that layer has been removed. Again, I'm not saying it's fun, right? I don't enjoy having certain feelings, but I'm not afraid to feel them. That is a subtle distinction, but an important one.
Yeah. And our emotions are trying to make sense of the sensations that we have in our body. They're labels to make Yep. sense of the sensations that we have. And that's based on past and present context. It's based on the various flavors and ingredients that go into that. So when you learn about your stress system, you can very easily trigger a flow state. Because what is that flow state? It's that place between anxiety and control, effort and ease. That's where flow lies, right? Right there. So if we're too much in hyperarousal or anxiety, it's harder to go into flow state. However, if you can say yes to the stress, whoop, straight in you go, straight in you go. It's like, it's amazing. And some of it might take a little convincing to start with because we have become habitual in our ways. We have learnt habits in the nervous system, and anxiety, defaulting to anxiety has become a habit if it's not a real and present threat, right?
Yep.
And the beauty of that is we can change our habits.
Yes.
We can change them. And the best way to change those is where they're at, which is in your subconscious mind, right? You can use conscious things to change your habits. You can walk differently into your house. You can put your bag down differently, and you've automatically changed your pattern of activation in your brain, AKA your behavioral habit. and you can hop on one leg and go into your house. So say you have a habit of doing some drugs when you get home, right? Maybe smoking some weed or something like that when you get home. And maybe you want to shift that habit. And you're like, okay, if your brain has primed you, it's literally primed you by pruning receptors and all these kinds of things for that oncoming chemical response because you've done it habitually. So to consciously break that habit, you need to switch up your routine. Drive home differently. Literally hop on one leg differently. And that immediate response, or walk backwards, big fan of walking backwards, that really messes things up. Do a cartwheel, whatever it is, a handstand, right? You're going to shift that pattern just a little bit, that even if you do your habit 20 minutes later, you didn't do it immediately.
Yep.
And then you retrain your brain.
A very small example in my world, and I don't need to go into this, Jay. I know we have a million questions. I have a million questions too. I want to basically do like 18 episodes in a row with only Lucy. Small example from my world is I realized it. I wasn't conscious to it. This is a few years ago, something like that. I live in New Jersey outside New York City. And when I go to catch the train, and when I'm coming back from the city catching the train, I would always let myself get some crappy food. So the addiction, the quote unquote drug of this sugar or whatever I was like rewarding myself or the treat I was letting myself have, I would associate that with going to the city and getting on the train. I was like, ooh. And I noticed it when I was going to the city more. I was like, oh, dang, I gotta interrupt that habit collapse, that habit association. And I ultimately did. I mean, I don't always do it, but I do it far less now than I have in years past.
Absolutely.
Listen, I've got a theory in here I want to throw into the hat because we're throwing things around. I believe in infinite quantum jumping, where there's infinite realities happening simultaneously all around us in all these infinite timelines. And that when you do these types of actions where you disrupt a pattern of consistent behaviors, that you pop into another timeline for a second and you start putting some energy into anchoring another timeline. And that if you do that enough repetitions, you leave one timeline and you jump over to another. So something as simple as walking backwards instead of forwards disrupts this pattern of behavior. Like, if you didn't do that, you would just stay on the same timeline and that would be your journey and your destination called your life. But if you do disrupt it, you jump over to another timeline, which is also your life, but it's a slightly different life. It's not the same life that you would have lived if you'd stayed on the other timeline. I want to talk about your book. Do you want to talk about your book?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's wrap up this subconscious thing because that very much goes into my book. And
Lucy, anything that we haven't touched on that you want to touch on, like, please share all that. We have plenty of time. It's more just like, we don't want to keep you forever. Be respectful. Those things that we do with our guests.
Yeah, no worry. I made sure I blocked out 2 hours. So we're good.
Cool.
So just getting back to the habits situation, we can disrupt our habits consciously, like we just talked about. Jay is like doing things different. And I love how you talk about your timeline, right? I just revert to patterns of activation or activity. But habits, automatic behaviors come from the subconscious, much like learning to drive, much like learning to tie your shoe without looking. We've learned this pattern of behavior. And so when we have things like emotional distress or pain, and we don't necessarily know, it's not a real and present danger, we may be defaulting, and this happens a lot, especially to sports people and anyone in life, actually, we may be defaulting to that I'm not good enough subconscious kind of program, right? And that's in the subconscious. So to dismantle a habit completely and easily, we want to work with the subconscious mind. And I offer in my practice what I call flow mind deep visualization. And that's very much about tapping into your subconscious mind and allowing that conscious mind just to have something to do and shift to the side for a second while we talk to that thing and disrupt the patterns from there. And you can do that relatively easy. That's what self-hypnosis is, or what hypnosis can do for you. That is essentially the premise. Flow mind deep visualization is what I call my way to microdose flow. And microdosing flow is more of the outcome, being that I make myself feel better by rushing, triggering lots of reward chemistry to the point that I look messed up. You don't have to have, it's a lot easier in high challenge situations like action sports and stuff, but you can trigger a macro flow purely through breathing and focus. And I remember when I did this in front of a friend for the first time, a friend D, again, I was in Thailand. It was the time I did my teeth, actually. And I was like, all right. And I was having a pain attack and I just dropped in. I was like, all right, I'm going to do my relaxation response, breathing, focus word. That's it. She knew that she needed to just leave me to it. And in an amount of time, and I think that that was about 20 minutes or so, I dropped into a macro flow state where I was absolutely pissing myself laughing. You would think I was on acid. Like D, my friend, said, I've seen this before. I was literally crawling on the wall. Like I could see. I have terrible eyesight from this neurological thing. I was sitting here and I could see far across the highway into the rooms where people were in their rooms.
Wow.
My senses heightened so incredibly. And I think it was relative to the fact that pain is a flow trigger. And because I said yes to the stress and accepted it, I triggered into this macro flow.
Amazing.
And I was having a total conniption fit, like full on conniption fit. It lasted for, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 minutes. And then I started to calm down. And that brings me to wanting to talk about the calm down of flow and how very important it is for people to take care of the calm down of flow. And it's important to recognize that there's nothing wrong with you, even though you may feel emotionally flat. So if you've ever taken recreational drugs in your life, we all know that you might get the Tuesday blues, right? And that's when you're starting to come down. You might feel tired, sleepy, not so good. You might feel emotional or even depressed, right? And that's purely your body rebalancing itself. Now, when we are in a flow state, we are chemically high. We are literally triggering those same kinds of chemicals, maybe not quite as intensely, but in my case, sometimes as intensely, if not more so. So you need to take care of that calm down. And you can mistake things. If you don't know this is a really important thing of optimal performance or flow state, then you may mistakenly think there's something wrong with you. You may experience emotional distress or anxiety or depression. And it's a normal part of balancing flow. It's a really, really important part of how your brain works with balancing chemistry. So we have to do that to take care of that. And that could look like watching a funny movie, snuggling with your dog, making sure that you have really quality nutrition, doing some light exercise. If someone has said that breathing hasn't worked for them or it's made them feel worse, they've tried breath holding or box breathing or holding in some kind of a way. And it's the same deal as what I just said about the ice bath. If you can't trigger the relaxation response, holding your breath stimulates your sympathetic nervous system. So if you can't then bring yourself down, then you'll stay in arousal. Your energy will stay up. And then that energy gets an emotion attached to it.
Yep.
And we feel anxiety, right? Or maybe something like that. So it's advantageous to start with breath work, with just slow breathing and getting used to triggering your relaxation response with that, and then build to breath holding, because breath holding is fantastic. There's lots of really great ways that you can trigger a flow quickly. But if you're already suffering from something like anxiety and you don't know why and you haven't dealt with those things, it can be counterproductive for some people. And so it only takes a week of doing it. It only takes a couple of days of doing a practice that then your nervous system learns to trust you and you trust your nervous system. And then you can start practicing and perhaps a breath hold or something such like that. And then it'll actually do what it's meant to do, like what it's designed to do.
You know,
but
I bet
certainly with pranayama, sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I bet I use upward of a dozen different types of breathing patterns, depending on what the circumstance is for me. And, you know, being a career athlete and getting into older age and really recognizing how important it is to utilize these like de-stress specific breaths. And like the one that I use a lot for managing my nervous system is to do the deep, long nasal inhale till it's almost full, and then take a quick right on top and then exhale through the mouth, right? And that one really helps me to mediate nervous system. Whenever I, if I hit an anxiety moment, like I've pushed my respiration or my cardio a little too hard and suddenly I'm starting to feel a little scared, that, you know, and having anxiety triggers, that one, especially if you get the stitch, you know, the stitch in the side of the lung, that's just one of a dozen different types of breathing, you know, that whether I'm trying to downregulate or upregulate, depending on exactly where I'm at. I mean, the gym, I was just upregulating like mad as I'm pumping myself up to try and push a weight that I was in, you know, the near my limit of my capacity. So, yeah. so much great value in breathing. And that's a whole other episode. And I think I'm going to put a pin in that topic for us because we could go on for hours and hours. I'd like to hear where we can find out about your book, where people can learn more, tell us more about, where can our audience find out about you?
Absolutely. Okay. So you can learn about me best for, as a coach, a peak performance coach. You can either go to my website, lucysharping.com or flowmindcoaching.com. You'll see my stuff there. I offer different types of therapeutic tools. Flowmind deep visualization is a major one. You don't actually have to be coached by me to have a session with me for that. So that's really using breathing, visualization, hypnosis to help you learn to go in a flow state. And my big mission is to teach you to do it yourself. I don't want you to keep coming to me. I want you to learn how to do this yourself. There is nothing special about me that can do this. I know that you can do it too. It just takes practice. That's all. It takes a little bit of practice, and it's less practice than what you think. It's consistency. Much like any athlete listening to this, you know, progress comes from consistency, right? And it's like you want to build any muscle, you got to go consistently. Otherwise, it's going to be up and down and up and down. And ultimately, we want to help you get that pattern of activation where you can very quickly tip into a flow state. Now, I do have a book coming out next month called Microdosing Flow.
Microdosing Flow. Oh, I can't wait to read it. I cannot wait. Please say more.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of science in that. Now, I presented it that way. There's sections in the book that discuss drugs, prescription and otherwise. One of the most powerful things about microdosing flow or on-demanding flow for pain and mental health is that you don't need to use drugs. Unless you choose to.
Yeah.
Right? You don't need to.
So good.
Those drugs don't actually solve a pathological problem. They just change your mood. So you can change your mood with your change your the way that you feel with doing different things. And that's essentially what this is. So there's a whole section in there about education, because most people don't know anything about the drugs that they take. And they have a very solid opinion about them, but they really don't know how they work all. So it's important for me to help people at a rudimentary level understand what those drugs do and what they do not. Especially when in 2021, 45 people a day died from prescription opiate use.
Yeah.
Prescription opiate use. Not even fentanyl.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's terrible. It's an epidemic. It's absolutely unacceptable. And we need to be looking for alternative systems to manage pain. And this is one of them. So thank you so thank you so much for bringing this to us as a species and as a people, and for the work that you've done to heal yourself, because inevitably this your efforts to learn about yourself and then to capture it and to share it are going to help countless other people. So absolute pleasure having you with us here today, Lucy. Just
I'd like to share one more thing with you guys.
Please.
It's a poignant thing.
Yes. Please do
it's a poignant thing. It is it's about embarrassment.
Ooh.
You've got to get yourself past the embarrassment or be okay with embarrassment to take care of yourself. So if you're overly concerned with what other people think about you, or you have embarrassment or shame, then you're going to stay focused on that. And that'll keep that stress system alive. So the sooner you can let go of that and allow yourself to be embarrassed and not give a fuck about what other people think, whether you actually wholly believe that yet or you don't, you're just trying to convince yourself. Either way, everything's a step in the right direction. But you've got to move through that in order to take care of yourself in this kind of a way. Stop making the rest of the world your judge and jury.
Yeah.
You take care of you. Do whatever it takes. And if that means that you have to sing at the top of your lungs in LAX airport like I did, and turn into a complete animal, screaming into the pillow, everyone watching me, but I got my pillow, shoved my head in it, started singing, and I changed my state like that. And they weren't going to let me on the plane.
Incredible. Yeah. Absolutely incredible. Lucy, I am profoundly moved and excited to know you. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Like, I literally am getting choked up in a good way. Like, this is such important information for people. And your story is just mind blowing. And it's so powerful because of the extremity of your story. And again, to your last point there, clearly you are without shame, that you are transmuting your pain quite literally into service. And that is just, I keep saying it, but it's gold. And I so, so appreciate you.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me on the show. And it's been a pleasure to be with you here. And trust in the journey, peeps. That's the way.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone, seriously, for listening, for spending your valuable, valuable time, energy, and heart with us. Every bit of it makes a difference.
Yeah, thank you. We would love it if you could show your support for the show by subscribing on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, or follow us on Instagram. You can always click the like button, leave us a comment, or share an episode with somebody directly.
Like we mentioned, every month we host integration coaching circles. So, so much good work is happening there. You are invited to join us. Go to trustthejourney.today/integration. The Trust the Journey family includes these integration coaching circles and our private Facebook group where we connect and support each other. Join us by going to our website, trustthejourney.today, and click the orange Patreon button.
Yeah, thanks. It's your support and engagement that make the show possible. Thank you. We're here to connect with you. Feel free to DM us anytime on Instagram. We're at trustthejourney.today. Thank you. We love you.
We love you.
Keep laughing, keep loving, and keep trusting the journey.